Blog Talk Radio.
I stand before you today as a candidate for the Democratic nomination for the presidency of the United States of America. I am not the candidate of Black America, although I am black and proud. I am not the candidate of the women's movement of this country, although I am a woman and I'm equally proud of that. I am the candidate of the people of America.
Good morning and welcome to Saturday Mornings with Joy Keyes. I'm your host, Joy Keyes. Thank you for joining me this morning. I really appreciate you getting up and listening to the show. Today we're talking about women in politics. Why do women vote? Why do women run? How can we get more women in different positions of power? According to the Center for American Women in Politics, right now in 2009, the numbers of women in different offices include 90 women serve in the U.S. Congress, 17 women serve in the Senate, and 73 women serve in the House. The number of women in statewide elective executive posts is 74, while the proportion of women in state legislatures is 24%. So the question comes about is, how can we get more women voting? How can we get more women in office? I believe we have a caller. Hold on a second. Good morning. Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, this is Anita Lewis.
Hi, good morning, Anita. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, good morning. Good to be here.
This is Anita Lewis. She's the Legislative Program Manager from Health Partners of Philadelphia. She has a long history of working in politics and also in public relations. She is one of the founding members and past president of the Philadelphia Black Public Relations Society. Again, good morning, Anita.
Good morning, Joy.
Now, at Health Partners, hold on, we have one more caller.
Okay.
Good morning. Good morning, can you hear me?
Yes. Rondell Reynolds Brown.
Hi, good morning. This is Joy Keyes. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Absolutely. Thank you for the invitation. Good morning to the other ladies as well.
Anita Lewis is on the line.
Yeah.
Terrific, terrific.
This is Blondell Reynolds Brown, Councilwoman at Large. She's from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. She is dedicated to enriching the lives of Philadelphia residents by putting people first. As an educator and community activist, political leader, concerned parent, her focus and commitment to help others defined her work prior to her election to Philadelphia City Council. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
It's my absolute pleasure to be a part of a discussion that it sounds like ultimately it's about lifting up and supporting women.
Definitely. It's an important issue. I think I want to start off with the issue of, I was talking with Anita about political action committees, and she helps run one at Health Partners of Philadelphia. And I guess I want to ask Anita, one, how can people get something like that started at their companies, and how can you get more women involved? Do you feel that you have more women than men at your company involved? What's the situation there?
That's the million-dollar question. actually, I pretty much got my feet wet working with PACs or serving on a PAC through Councilwoman Brown's PAC, helping with her
That's
campaign
right.
and working with her organization and different initiatives, which not only her PACs help support not only women advocacy programs, but service of support for children as well, any
yeah.
issues that impact women and children. So having that experience and background when I was offered the opportunity at Health Partners and the job included participating or leading the PAC, serving as a leadership role with the PAC, I jumped on it because I was, of course, familiar with it and very comfortable in that role. As far as women in the company, we have more women on the PAC than men. I think men, in my opinion, men tend to be very politically savvy more than women because they all come to me with opinions and ideas. However, they really won't serve in the capacity of you know, raising funds and,
right.
and helping to educate the rest of the employees about healthcare initiatives that that reflect the company's mission.
Well, now you bring in speakers and things to try to educate the staff about different political issues. It doesn't matter, you know, Democrat, Republican, whatever. You just try to make them more educated. Well, how can, say, a woman who's at a company somewhere else, how could she start a PAC?
Well, I guess, you know, I kind of inherited the PAC at Health Partners, and I would like to think the first step is to understand what is the mission of the company, what is the goal, what is the message, what would be the message of the PAC? Because everyone has to be on board for the same message. If they're asked, well, what does your PAC do, can't just say, well, we raise money so we can make contributions to political officials. Well, we do that, but we are very specific and strategic with our contributions. We, you know, usually try to make contributions to those who are decision makers that impact healthcare issues, more specifically, the people that we serve. So we try to focus on making and supporting those political officials in the, you know, districts or the areas where our members live.
That affect your members and things, yeah.
Absolutely.
Now, Blondo
yeah.
Reynolds Brown, thank you again for joining us this morning. You have won. You are in an elected position. You are in a position of power. What do you think made you successful in terms of winning as opposed to, say, someone else? What could help a woman who wants to run for office win, in your experience?
That's an excellent, excellent question. And I'll use Anita's response as a segue, where she indicated that in her company, more women are involved in the PAC because men tend to be a bit more politically savvy. That is a fact. Mm-hmm. Women, though we represent 56% of the vote in Philadelphia, African-American women vote in higher numbers than any other group, but we're the least likely to
mm-hmm.
give contribution dollars to candidates, including women.
Yeah.
So for me to win, it took raising an enormous amount of money. In fact, the first time I ran, I actually lost. I only raised $89,000. Not enough at all for a citywide race. The second time I ran...
How much money do you think you need to have to run for office?
You need to start at the door when you announce. You need to have, if you're running citywide, you need to start at the door with about $150,000 in the bank.
Stops women? Yep. Do you think that stops women then in terms of the economic issue of running?
Without a doubt, it stops women, and it could be even more discouraging because our female counterparts and men simply do not do what Anita clearly stated. Make the commitment to make a financial contribution to support candidates that support the issues that you care about, which typically should be the glue. And without a war chest and without fundraising dollars, we simply cannot get our message out. We simply can't, you know, you have to open up a campaign office, you have to feed volunteers, you have to have campaign literature, you have to hopefully maybe go on radio. You
right.
have to pay elections for Election Day, and that doesn't happen on a wish. It happens on hard dollars in the bank.
So you're saying put your money where your mouth is to the women out there who are concerned about different issues, whether it's education, whether it's health care in Anita's case, whether it's the environment, then put your money where you want to see change and support those candidates so that they can be successful.
And you know what? I'm sorry, Councilwoman.
Go right ahead.
What I was going to say to actually add on to what you said, one of the main things that I learned working with the Councilwoman is – you know, not only to support a candidate that reflects the values and concerns and issues that you may be interested in, but why won't you decide to run? We don't have enough women in the legislature, more specifically women of color, that really can speak on behalf of these voters that the councilwoman was talking about, which are clearly in larger numbers. And what I learned from the councilwoman and from other female legislators, and I also serve as a board member for the Pennsylvania Women's Campaign Fund.
And very good, Anita.
Thank you. I'm trying, councilwoman. I'm trying. I might be one of maybe two or three women of color on the board. And the organization might have about 30 women in total representing
right.
the entire state of Pennsylvania. So three out of maybe 30, 35 women, you know, that's a still small percentage. But what I've found was women have a hard time, and it doesn't matter what color you are, women have a hard time asking for money for themselves. That's not the case with the councilwoman, though.
I've gotten a lot better. I've had to get a lot better. Indeed. Well, Anita's point is so very, very well taken. If we look at the Commonwealth alone, the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, believe it or not, Pennsylvania gets a D minus in women's voting and other political participation. A D. We are 42 from the bottom when it comes to women participating, women acting as candidates, women contributing. And, you know, and it doesn't have to be a public elected office. How about running out as a committee person, as a member of a school board? Because there's certain counties in Pennsylvania. Exactly. Right in the community, and then earn your way and work your way towards other higher-level offices.
And Joy, the number she's talking about, 42, is out of 50 states. We're talking about, you know, across the country.
Yeah. Well, according to the Center for American Women in Politics, there are 20 women of color congresswomen. There are 7 statewide elective executives. There's only 12 African-American, Representative Corrin Brown, Representative Yvette Clark, Donna Edwards. We also think about Shirley Franklin. She was the first woman mayor.
Of Atlanta.
Of Atlanta, Georgia. Christine Todd Women, first and woman governor. Of New Jersey. There's a lot of firsts. And when I opened the show, I opened with Shirley Chisholm, just some speech she gave. And she definitely had a huge effect on women in politics.
Yes, she
was elected congresswoman from Brooklyn in 1969, and her slogan was unbought and unbossed.
That's right.
If you look at her, she was so strong, so powerful at a time where
way
a lot of transition was happening.
Yep.
Well, just definitely ahead of her time. Definitely ahead of time. So how can now, Blondell Reynolds Brown, you're here in Philadelphia. Now, what do you see for your future? Do you see another level of politics for yourself?
Well, I'm pleased to say and thankful to say that I'm now serving in my third term in city council, and I would like to get reelected in 2011. And then possibly after that, look at leadership posts within city council. There are 3 leadership positions in council. You have to earn your way because there are others ahead of you, and there's a lot to be said for seniority and a lot to be said for having the leadership willingness to move to a leadership level. I love my work in city council, and I would be content to retire from city council, but I don't want that to be the only thing on my tombstone. Like, I have some other dreams to write children's books and a couple of other things. But in terms of elected office, I would simply like to earn the opportunity to move into leadership right there in city council.
Right. Well, now you mentioned, I know you have children, correct?
Yes. I have a 13-year-old daughter.
Beautiful,
right? I think she went to Powell School, correct?
She sure did. She started her education at Powell. That's exactly right.
My daughter also went to Powell. It was a wonderful school.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, I think that that may be an issue for women, too, balancing family life, career, and then you're talking political career where it's very, you know, everybody's digging in all your information about your family, your friends, anything you did, you know, 25,000 years ago. Anita, you know, in your experience, you work with a variety of politicians. How do you see politicians balancing that family life and being a politician? The difference between the men politicians you deal with and the women, what do you see, Anita?
Well, you know what? Actually, I have, of course, there's clearly a difference when a man runs for office versus a woman. And I've seen women do phenomenal things and be there for their children and making sure, I mean, I've seen the councilwoman cooking dinner, you know, making sure her daughter does her homework and that kind of stuff. And it is a balancing act. And the men have the support because they have their counterpart, not to say that the councilwoman didn't. I'm just sharing the difference from a political official's perspective from what I witnessed.
Right.
And they have the support already there, so they're kind of limited with their contribution to the family, and they can focus more on the drive of pursuing their political career. However,
I think we have one more caller. Anita, hold on a second. We have one more caller. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Hi. Did you have a question or comment for the guest this morning?
No, ma'am.
No, you just wanted to listen in. Okay, thank you for joining us.
Mm-hmm. However, what I've found is these new young men who are coming into office are so much more, I think, family-driven. And like even our current mayor who drops his daughter off in the morning when he was a council member, I mean, they're proactively engaged in the family life because, you know, nowadays it takes everyone pitching in, even if you have your own personal dreams, it takes everyone pitching in. I mean, our
No, I just wanted to get her comments since she does have a child. How do you balance the situation?
I applaud for recognizing that that there is, and Anita has said it very, very diplomatically. I would say more directly is that male elected officials have a wife. Female elected officials don't have a wife. And so I often characterize my work as, you know, a working mother walking on a tightrope backwards with high heels on, blindfolded, doing the juggle. Trying to stay pertinent in my daughter's, most importantly for me, her academic pursuits, making sure she's indeed fulfilling her potential as a good student while I meet the demands of work, which I often tell people is 9 days a week, 72 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to be incredibly organized. You have to have not a good staff, but an exemplary staff. And I'm thankful to say I'm actually a part of a village of moms. It's about 6 moms, all of us with these very, very demanding jobs. And we are each other's, we carpool our children. They do Sunday school together. Some of them do camp together. A couple of them are going to summer school together. And we lean on and rely on each other so much. If I 10 o'clock a.m. speaking engagement, I need to get my daughter to choir at church. Mm-hmm. I can call one of the other mothers who also has her daughter in choir at church for help. It really does require help and
a lot of support.
Because you cannot do this job and not have the support if you are a working parent. You have to have the support. It's absolutely essential.
Now, what do we think about the issue of scandal? We've seen recently a lot of male politicians with side businesses, if we shall say, mistresses. Do we see women in scandals? I mean, they're very minimal. I mean, what are your comments about that, Anita? I mean, in terms of politicians, what's going on with these guys and the power? I mean, are they going crazy? I mean, don't women cheat? I mean, I know women cheat and women politicians make negative choices. I mean, What's the deal here?
You know what? Can we just be frank? We know this is nothing new. I'm not surprised. It's just that, you know, these characters got caught. You know, not all of them do it. I'm very clear about that. Some folks, you know, take their marriages very seriously and you know, are actively engaged in their family life and love their wives and all of that kind of stuff and would never do anything to try to taint their home life because
women aren't tempted? I mean, women, they always say it's about the issue of power. So now, you know, more women, not enough, definitely not enough, not nearly enough, as we just spoke earlier this morning, women involved in politics, women, you know, making a commitment to run even at a beginning level of office. But anybody in a position of power can be tempted to make a negative choice. I mean, what is it the difference between a man and a woman? I mean, Blondo Reynolds Brown, what do you think? You've had the ability to make, I'm sure, lots of different choices, some, you know, positive and negative. What stops you? What keeps you on the right track with this level of power that you have?
Well, and you know what? I am so, so very reluctant to use the word power for Blondell.
Okay.
I'm clear that the mayor has power and I have influence.
Right. Okay.
In some ways the same thing, but power, I believe, has stronger anchors, if you will. And I felt that Blondell does not put power and Blondell in the same. So am I in a position of influence? Absolutely. To your question, I think, first of all, we have to recognize that at the end of the day, we are a public service and not perfect servants. We're human beings, and all of us, you know, are susceptible to falling short. Secondly, for me, it's discipline, self-discipline, if you will, and I guess the fear of the embarrassment that would bring to those that I love and care about, and to those who had some level of faith in me.
Right.
So, you know, clearly he lost his self-control, but at the end of the day, when you reduce it to the lowest common denominator, we all at any day can fall short. It's just
right.
that he's in the public eye,
yeah,
you know.
Definitely. Now, how can we get the young women? You have a daughter, 13. I have a daughter who's 15. And how do we start them on that path? I was hoping to get a call from Erin Velarde from the White House Project. She's actually in a conference in Atlanta, Georgia, right now, Georgia Go Run. So she may or may
right?
not be able to call in. But how? That's one of the organizations, the White House Project. They work on help grooming women for political office.
Terrific.
What do we say to our young women? Do they need to go to political science? Do they need to get a law degree?
It starts earlier than that. Oh, absolutely, yes. It starts much earlier than that. All of us, as I am certain, is mentoring some younger lady in our lives. And it starts off simply by taking them to various events where they get a chance to see government in action, or women just doing in action. You know, always. I take my daughter to most places as long as it's not interfering with her studies, so that she can see that women can be about business and be about getting it done. Taking our children to the voting booth, requiring our children to look at the news, requiring young ladies in our lives, encouraging them to volunteer, just start volunteering on little projects. I take great pride in the women's event that Anita has been a large part of over the years, and I deliberately look for young women between the ages of 21 and 30 to ask them to volunteer, because it really just starts with a spirit of volunteerism. And the fact is, when others see you volunteer, see you do a good job, they ask you to do more. But if we don't encourage our younger women to be a part of something, then we get what we get. And so it starts long before them going off to college. In fact, the hope is if you can tap their curiosity and help them understand that giving up your time is valuable, that matters on a college application. Because
nowadays,
universities are looking for, and what is your community experience?
Yeah.
Well, my daughter was involved in Girl Scouts, and that really engages young women, a variety of projects, cleaning up the neighborhood, food, signs, all kinds of projects that they do in helping the communities where they are. And also, I took my daughter, every time I go to vote, I try to take my daughter when she was like little, 5 years old, in the booth with me, showing her what the buttons mean, you know, how does it work. And so, you know, when she decides to vote, she'll know what to do. She won't be nervous or scared, or, you know. And even now, she's older, I can have a higher level conversation with her about the different candidates that, you know, come up, and, you know, why am I voting for them, and why should she vote, and going online to their websites. And like you
Very
said, you're
good.
Taking your daughter to, you know, different events and places where they can see women actively engaged and doing things to help the community. Anita, what drew you into politics, and how did you get into this area?
Well, I think, you know what, I'm a baby of the 60s, and I just remember, I have a very vivid memory of my uncles who were very politically involved. We're talking about the 60s, Black Power, civil rights, and things of that nature. And I just remember being a little girl and them having me sitting up on a counter in the YMCA and helping them give out lunches to the kids in the community. I mean, it just started that early, and just listening to them talk about the injustices of people of color and just fighting for things that I saw, if it affected them, it would, or it does, affect me. And I think I just kind of fell into politics for that reason, I think.
Now,
it wasn't deliberate, that's for sure.
Now, we talked about this issue of women being afraid. We only have a couple minutes left, but the issue of women being afraid to ask for money. I mean, is it that women don't value their voice? Do they feel that women, their voices are not important? How do we instill that high self-esteem that you're concerned about is important?
Let me correct my statement. It's not that women have a problem asking for money. I think they have a problem with asking for money for themselves, because I have no problems when I would help the councilwoman or any other legislator raise money on Cindy Bass. I would ask for a contribution on their behalf, and I would ask for, you know, $50, $100, whatever I thought that person that I was asking, who was a personal friend of mine, could afford to give. So that was easy for me. Now, if I were to run for office, I don't think I could do it. I don't think I could do it. That's
but
why
now, why
I don't
is
run.
That? Why is that? Blondell, what's
well,
your opinion
you know
on
what?
This matter?
Raising money is extremely, extremely intimidating.
Mm-hmm.
And becoming comfortable with the fact that you may make a dozen calls, and out of that, you might get one yes. Because in 80% of those cases, you're going to have to call people back. You're going to have to chase people down.
Yeah.
And, again, it requires self-discipline and sitting at a desk every single Friday for 2 and 3 hours with business cards and phone lists and literally, very, very literally going through each individual call, calling the person, and then writing down, did you leave a voicemail? Did they say call back? Did they say call me in 30 days? Did they say put me something in the mail? It is a very tedious, meticulous process, but it's required if you want to run and win. And so it means getting over the fact that you're going to get mostly no's, and once in a while you're going to get a yes.
Yes,
it's not personal.
Yes.
It's just that folks, many persons aren't able to give, and those that are, you have to help. You have to give them a reason on why investing in you is worth their while.
Right. We have some callers. Callers, I just want to let you know, if you do have a question or comment today, we only have a couple minutes left. Please press the number one, and I will know to pick up your call. We only have a couple minutes left, and so what do we see for the future for women? How we just, you know, Hillary, Sarah Palin.
Yes.
What's coming
well, you know what I'm excited about? What I'm extremely excited about is that First Lady Michelle Obama made it okay to be a working mother and meet the demands of being a mother and the demands of the work. And she has said so many quotes and given so many messages around this, but the one I remember best is every single morning I get up and wonder if I'm doing the right thing. Because when I'm with my daughters, I feel I should be doing more with my work. And if I'm working hard on a project or an initiative, I'm feeling like I should be in the presence of my, I know exactly what that feels like. And so she has, and for me, validated that these feelings are natural, and they are, they come with the territory for us career women who also want to be mothers who are present. I'm excited about who she is, what she represents, and what she boasts for the future.
I think it's also a wonderful image for African-American women of color, and that she is, in terms of being a wife, we just, you know, talked about, you know, these male politicians have wives, and you don't have a wife. But she is still doing what she feels is important. She's still making contribution to the society. She doesn't seem smaller than him in any way or shape or form as his wife. You know, in some cases, the wives are silent. But in her case, I don't see that at all. I want to thank Anita Lewis, Legislative Program Manager from Health Partners. I want to thank Councilwoman Blondell Reynolds-Brown for joining me this morning on this great conversation about women in politics. Definitely we will try to have another show about it because it's an ongoing issue. I want to thank the listeners this morning for joining me. And if you have any comments or questions for me, you can email me at SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@hotmail.com. Again, that's SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@hotmail.com. And don't forget to mark the show as a favorite. Coming up, I'm going to do a part two this morning, online in Africa, with Benin Brown. He works with the TED Fellow, Joshua Wanyama. So, again, thank you so much, ladies, for joining
me. Thank
you,
ladies. It was an absolute pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a great weekend.
You too. You have a wonderful weekend.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.